So, Larry, let's start a little bit with the background on the Jester Farmhouse. So what is its significance?
Well, okay, the farmhouse was built along Grub Road in the early 1800s on land that was then known as the Wilson Farm. It is shown on an 1849 map that it belonged to a Robert Johnson. The property was then owned by the Day family from about the time of the Civil War until around World War II. The farmhouse, which is one of the few remaining in Brandywine Hundred, was typical of those found throughout the area in the mid-19th century. With its surrounding fields, it shows what farming was like in the area before it became dominated by suburban subdivisions. The structure is distinct because it was made of stone, and then a wood frame addition was built onto it in the late 19th century. Although the Day family owned the farm for nearly a century, it gets its name from Francis and Eleanor Jester, who owned the property from 1953 to 1974 and then sold it to Newcastle County.
So how close did it come to being lost? Your piece notes it has struggled to find help and a purpose.
Well, when the county acquired the farm, 30 acres or so, in 1974, it had a long-term plan to create a park there that was deemed to be a great need for another recreational facility in Brandywine Hundred. But it didn't really have any plans for the farmhouse. Now, plans for the park languished, and this really wasn't all that big a deal because the owners of the High Point Dairy had leased the land as a place for their cows to graze. However, after the Jesters moved out, except for a few very brief periods, the farmhouse was vacant, and the county did nothing at all to maintain it. Periodically, some ideas did pop up. A soccer organization wanted to put some playing fields on the land. The dairy's owner suggested something like a community creamery for the farmhouse, but none of these ideas worked out.
So what was the turning point for its preservation? Who stepped up to kind of take up the cause?
Well, nearly 20 years ago, members of the Day family, who still lived in the area, helped convince the county not to demolish the farmhouse. Also helping in that effort was Todd Baston, who lived across the street from the farm, and he hated to see the building deteriorate. Over Christmas in 2015, he expressed his concerns to his son, Alan Baston, and they started brainstorming some ideas. Alan Baston had an arts background, so he contacted some other artists, and in less than a year, they had an idea for a gathering space for artists in the community. Meanwhile, the county had this program called Resident Curatorships. The idea behind it was to get people to spend $150,000 or more to fix up historic properties and then agree to live in them for 20 years rent-free, paying only the maintenance costs. But the program had few takers, and when Baston's group made its proposal, the county recognized the merits of turning a portion of this parkland into a cultural space.
And that is where we get what is now being called the Jester Art Space. So what exactly is that, and how does it plan to use the building?
Well, the Jester Art Space is a nonprofit organization. Right now, they've got a core group of about 20 volunteers. And when they pitched the idea to the county in 2016, since there was no takers on the resident curatorship, the county agreed to come up with a lease arrangement for them. Now, the group plans to use the building for a variety of different purposes, art exhibits, classes, workspace for artists, and they would even expect to be able to rent the building out for special events.
But creating the Jester Art Space has faced some hurdles. How difficult has it been for this group to get their plan off the ground?
Well, as you might expect, the big hurdle was getting the structure into usable condition. So the deal between the Art Space and the county called for the county to get the exterior into shape, and the Art Space would handle the interior improvements. The county would also handle landscaping plus paving for parking and an entry road. However, the original plan came in way over the county's budget, so the exterior work had to be scaled back, and some changes had to be made because the wood frame walls had deteriorated during all those years of neglect.
So, Larry, where do things stand now? What's the timetable for completion of this project? And what about the space around the building?
Okay. Now, as of now, the demolition work on the site is nearly complete. If you looked at it today, you would see 2.5 stone walls still standing, and that leaves a pretty clear view of a bare interior. There's no roof. The second floor is gone. The county says the work that it is paying for, essentially reconstructing the exterior so it looks much like it did in the late 1800s, but with modern materials, should be done by the end of June. Now, the Jester Art Space these people hope that they can complete the interior work by September or October so they can start using the building before the end of the year. Overall, the county is putting about $1.3 million into the project, and the art space figures the interior work will cost about $250,000. But they're hoping to get some donations of labor and materials to keep their expenses down. As for the surrounding property, essentially farmland, the county is turning this into a neighborhood park, essentially passive recreation. They're going to put in walking, biking, pedestrian trails in a double loop configuration. So it would pretty much go around the exterior of the park, and there would also be entrance pathways in from the couple of developments that surround it. The county is hoping to get that done by the end of the year, but that's still kind of iffy.
So, Larry, what have we learned from the preservation of the Jester Farmhouse about handling other properties in need of preservation? What are the options likely to be used going forward from here?
Well, you know, the saga of the Jester Farmhouse shows that every episode of what preservationists call demolition by neglect doesn't have to have an unhappy ending. Interested groups that have adequate resources can find ways to create new uses for historic structures. But while the county expects the farmhouse to be a success story, the government also has some work to do. 9 years ago, the county did identify five properties, including the Jester Farmhouse, as candidates for the resident curatorship program. As I mentioned, there's a trade-off here. The resident agrees to spend $150,000 or more for 5 years and then take care of the ongoing maintenance in exchange for living in the building rent-free for a 20-year term. But there's a problem. Banks aren't going to loan prospective curators $150,000 when they can't use the building as collateral, and that's a lot of money to put up if you've got nothing to show for it when your lease is up. So as a consequence, people are more likely to go and, you know, use whatever savings they have, buy their own home rather than invest in something where you've got nothing at when you're ready to move out. So anyhow, the resident curatorship has worked at only one of the five county-owned properties that were identified for the program. The other issue here is that the county never had a plan for maintaining the farmhouse for all the time that it has owned it. County Councilwoman Dee Durham has a proposed ordinance in the pipeline that would attempt to address that issue. Her proposal, which should come up for a county vote and county council vote this spring, would require that whenever the county acquires a property with historic significance, that it begin the process of giving it historic overlay zoning within 90 days of the acquisition. Now, historic overlay zoning sets some restrictions on how the property can be used, but it doesn't specifically address this issue of the maintenance. And now another member of county council that I was talking to pointed out that, you know, it's kind of hypocritical for the county to penalize property owners for violations of the county's building maintenance code when it's not taking proper care of its own property as well. So maybe there's a need for additional legislation in this area.
So you mentioned that only one of the resident curatorship properties has worked out the way the county had hoped. Can you give us any specifics on how that one actually worked out?
Well, the success story is a place called Woodstock, which is a home that was built in 1743, and it's located in Banning Park, just outside of Wilmington, just southwest of the city. And the county found a couple who had the money to put into the reservations, and the county people tell me that the couple is doing a fantastic job with maintaining the place after putting substantial funds into getting it into livable, habitable condition. Now, of course, at the other end of the spectrum, as I said, only one of these five has worked out, but at the other end of the spectrum, there's Ivyside in Bechtel Park in Brandywine 100 and the Tally Day House, which is behind the Brandywine 100 Library. Now, there have been a couple of nibbles on Ivyside, but nothing workable. Councilman John Cartier says that an American Legion post that's based in Claymont is looking for a home, and Ivyside might be suitable. But again, it would take a deal along the lines of the one arranged at Jester, with the county putting up the money for renovations to make that happen. Now, the Tally Day House has attracted absolutely no interest, and frankly, that's quite understandable. The old house, again, early mid-19th century farmhouse. It's surrounded now by so much foliage and trees that it can barely be seen, except by the vandals who have done substantial damage to the place, enough damage that the county has boarded up all the windows and doorways to it. The county hasn't made any investment in the structure, and I really can't imagine it being anything other than a victim of demolition by neglect. Not quite sure how long it'll be before that happens, but I really don't see any other alternatives right now.